Welcome to Reset Your Mindset with Angie Z. I'm super excited to have you here today to share inspirational stories from entrepreneurs around the world that provide you with valuable lessons and mindset strategies to enable you to play the game of life your way. So tell me a little bit about your journey and your story. I mean, it sounds fascinating just from the little bits and pieces that I've heard about.
I'll start from where I am a little bit and work backwards a little bit.
Okay.
I have been running a contemporary art gallery in Philadelphia for 17 years and working with artists from around the world. And I started out that business in 2001 with no clients and no money, but I had a background working for other people in the art world and through a series of frustrations and not being able to find the type of gallery that I wanted to operate and work in, I decided to open my own gallery. And so I didn't really have funding or people backing the project. I just found a space and jumped right in. And over the last, it took me about 5 years to actually start making money with the gallery. We had 9/11 happen, and
wow.
The economy was shifting up and down, and
yeah.
Art's definitely one of those commodities that it's not at the top of people's priority list, especially when the economy is not doing well. So it took me about 5 years to gain momentum, and then between years 5 and 7, I was featured on Anderson Cooper, CNN. And that really helped bring a lot of new clients to my doorstep. I ended up buying the building that I was operating in. It's a $1 million building. It's now worth $5 million. And,
nice.
And that was a big thing for me at the time. I ended up renovating the space and working with an architect that's quite beautiful. And basically started selling art at a very high level. $500,000, $1 million paintings with clients. I helped sell a $5 million painting for a client and really had to do a lot of growth and shifting to take on some of these challenging situations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect of my life. And through the years, I've always enjoyed educating people about art and connecting my clients with the artists, and really doing a lot within the art community with nonprofit work and giving back. I basically have decided that in the last year I'm really good at what I do, and I can continue down this path of running the successful business and continuing to make the money I make. However, what's been calling in my soul is to write a book the past few years and
mm-hmm.
share my story of being born into a drug-addicted family situation with an abusive mom. My mom at one point was a prostitute. She had 6 kids, and we all were in foster care from infancy until I went into a home at 9 where I was adopted. And I had an incredibly challenging childhood. So I wanted to share some of the stories from my childhood that were challenging and shaped me, and how I kept turning to art and creativity as a way to have my own voice and to protect myself and also express myself. And so that was happening at a young age for me. And so in writing my book and sharing that story, I take people through that progression, and then how I actually got into the art world starting in college and really worked my way up the ranks in the art market into starting my own business and really building it from 0 client to a multi-million-dollar business with the intention of empowering women and younger people to realize that they take control of their destiny. It doesn't matter what you're born into or what the circumstances are. You can take your mind, you can take action steps and really start creating your life from the ground up and from zero. Mm-hmm. And over a period of years and learning and struggling and being challenged, I kept growing and pushing through some of the fear challenges to really start becoming very successful in my industry. And it's predominantly a male-dominated industry.
Okay.
And the city that I operate in at the time was not known for contemporary art.
Mm-hmm.
And they have museums and institutions, but it was known as a place that only showed figurative art and academic type art. And I was working with artists coming out of graduate school that were unknown, so it was even more challenging.
Yeah.
So I'm really wanting to share my story to be a mentor and for people a platform to think about their own challenges in the art world or any industry.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start. That's a lot of information.
Yeah.
So what drew you originally to contemporary art, though?
I was in college in 1995. I was sitting in an art history class called Art in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I had declared my major as an art history studio art major the year prior. And I still, it felt right to me. And I was sitting in this class learning about cubism and all the art histories that preceded contemporary art. And I remember being totally bored. And then we got to a section on contemporary art. And the first artist that the professor started talking about was Jean-Michel Basquiat. And it was like his painting went up on this big screen in the dark room. My life, like, stopped. It was just like, whoa. Like, it hit me over the head, his work. And I don't know if you know Basquiat's work.
No, I don't.
Do you know his work?
I love art, but obviously, I'm drawn to certain types. I love Charles Billich.
Jean-Michel Basquiat was a Haitian, African-born artist who worked in New York City with Andy Warhol when they were during pop art and contemporary art coming out in New York. And he uses a mix of color, graffiti, and text and word and messages and drawings of people. But there's a lot of energy and a lot of emotion in his work, and it really connected with me on a level as a way that someone had expressed themselves. So that started my love of contemporary art in that moment. And I went to the library, I researched him, and really fell in love with his work, and then started, you know, going down the rabbit hole with Andy Warhol, Jasper Johns, and some of the contemporaries that were making art during that time.
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
So if you weren't making money in the 5 years, how did you actually get through that period?
So I talk about this in the book. I was in my gallery all the time.
Right.
I lived a few blocks away. I would basically go in there from early morning, and I would work until 2 a.m. And so I was just putting in a lot of hours, a lot of time. In the second year, and I basically was like living month to month, and I would sell enough to cover my expenses and then get through the next month. And I got through my first year with my lease. The second month, I decided to move out of my apartment.
Yeah.
And part of my space in my gallery, there was a basement. And it had a small kitchen and a small bathroom,
mm-hmm.
and it was covered in mold, and it was a storage area. So I decided to clean out that space and basically burn everything and bleed. And I gave up my apartment and I moved into the basement, so I didn't have, so I could put the rent that I was paying for my apartment into the gallery.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell anyone. I didn't want my family to know. I knew my parents would flip out and they'd
yeah.
be upset.
Yeah.
I didn't tell any of my clients. I knew that wouldn't bode well for me living in the basement of the space that I was operating a gallery out of, because of the perception of that. So I
yes.
basically went rock bottom and lived in a basement. I was eating ramen noodles. I was, you know, basically working all the time, 60-hour work weeks, and I started really building from there.
Mm. That's huge.
Yeah, and, you know, entrepreneurs, I think some people have the mindset that they'll do whatever it takes to be successful. And at that time, I realized for me personally that there was no going back. I could not
mm.
work for anyone again. There were no galleries that I wanted to sell art in Philadelphia that were
yeah.
authentic to what I wanted to sell. And so for me, it was like do or die. It was
mm.
going to happen. And if it meant that I was there at all hours working, and I didn't hire anyone, I didn't have an assistant. I did everything. I did all the client work, all the phone calls, all the selling. I did all the marketing mailings. I did all the art handling. I went to pick up paintings. I brought them in to hang them. I did all the art installations. I painted the gallery in between shows. So I literally was in there doing every single aspect of running the business. And, you know, I did my website. I did it all because I couldn't afford to hire someone at the time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I didn't want to fail. So I cut every expense I could and poured all of my energy and time into the business.
Goodness. That's huge. That's absolutely. And you did that for 5 years.
I did that for a few years.
Yeah.
And then year three, things really, I started selling more. And it just kept snowballing.
Wow.
And I started to relax more.
Yeah.
And feel more comfortable and work a little bit less. And then in year four, I was able to hire a full-time assistant to work with me. And so I could then give them all the admin work, and then I did all the client work.
Yes.
And all the selling.
Yeah.
And that's when I really felt a shift in the results coming in, because I was spending more time going out and networking, meeting clients, and having meetings in the gallery that were a lot more productive. Instead of painting walls of the website, I was actually doing all the sales work to build the business.
Mm. Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
So, with like your family and your upbringing and everything, do you still keep in contact with them at the moment?
I don't keep in touch with my birth family.
Right.
My mom, my biological mother passed away 5 years ago from lung cancer, and I never knew my father. So, my parents who adopted me,
mm-hmm.
me and two of my sisters. So they adopted three of us. And
oh, okay.
My two sisters have had, they never went to college. They were never able to fully assimilate into being adopted. They've had substance abuse issues their entire lives. And so I keep in touch with them, but they definitely have had their challenges, jail and heroin and drug abuse. And so that's been challenging for me and for them and my family.
But the parents, it sounds like you still talk to in that, like your foster?
Oh yeah. My adopted parents are
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
They're incredible people. And it's interesting that the foster care system at the time, and this was in the 80s, a lot of people were make money because the state would pay you $100 a month for a kid.
Yeah.
Had two kids in your house, you were making a couple $100 and so these homes would have 10 kids in them.
Oh, goodness.
It was a way to make money.
Yeah.
It wasn't about taking care of the kids. So I was very lucky in that when they went to find a home for me, it happened on a Friday. And basically what, and I'm just going to be open with you about my story. My birth mother was incredibly abusive and would basically beat me until I would have to go to the hospital. And with a broomstick, with whatever. She was on drugs and she was mentally unstable. And so she beat us so badly that we ended up in the hospital. Foster care got involved and it was a Friday. And so they had a few hours to find us a house for the weekend because they couldn't keep us in their office over the weekend. I grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, and they kept widening the net. And so the parents who ended up taking me in as a foster kid, they lived in Hunterdon County, which was a few hours away, but they had to widen the net to find me a home. So I ended up going outside the city a few hours and being placed with this amazing family. So this crazy, by crazy default and the timing and them needing to find us a home caused me to be placed several hours outside of where I was living and into this incredible family. So it was definitely a stroke of luck in my life. And I really attribute that to being where I am right now.
Definitely. So all your brothers and sisters, like your siblings, they all were fostered out to other people as well, like different families. You all went to different families.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It is, yeah.
So did you actually go to school and things like that if your mum was on drugs or?
No, and that's the thing, Angela. I didn't start school until I was 8 years old.
Oh my goodness!
I didn't know how to read, and so know anything really. I only knew the world inside my head and the feelings and what I was observing, and so I literally had to learn how to read. And I spent a summer being tutored to catch up to my age group. So, you know, I have always felt that I've had to work harder to be where I'm at, where a lot of people at that time, their parents, you know, taking care of them, teaching them things and reading to them, educating them, so that by the time they were in second grade, they knew a lot. So I really started from scratch with my education, and I really love learning. So I worked really hard to catch up with people, and I knew the significance of that at that age. So I just kept working hard to catch up with people. And going to college was definitely a big accomplishment for me to get to that point.
Definitely, I can understand that for sure. And I get your love of learning. I think, you know, when, particularly if you didn't have it in the early years, you know, it's probably something that you crave later on. You just want to know everything about everything.
It's true. And now, especially now, I feel like a sponge. I love people so much. And I have lots of clients and a lot of them are successful, and I love learning from them. They love learning about, I love reading books, and there's so much in our world right now that so many people that are writing and talking about things, and we're so connected through the internet and what's available, and I love all of it. And I love coaching and helping people too. So that's the other part of that.
So it sounds like really, you know, when you think about your life journey, that you were pretty much born to be resilient from the beginning.
Yeah.
Ingrained within you, I would say, to have to get through all of the things that you've gone through.
Yeah.
So you're strong-minded.
Yeah. And the other thing that, and again, I'm really excited. I'll be excited for you to read the book because it's 190. I think it's like a 500. I talk about how when I was born, we lived in a one bedroom apartment, and there were no toys. There was nothing in the apartment, no furniture. We had a mattress on the floor for six kids.
Oh, God.
I didn't grow up with anything really to stimulate me other than my siblings and our surroundings, which were totally bare. So I really had to draw my own creativity to do stuff and entertain myself. And so that was something at an early age. I was always thinking about ways to do something or entertain myself or my siblings. And so that definitely comes into play with my business acumen, where I love problem solving, and I do a lot of problem solving with the gallery business and my clients, and it could be working with a collection or a budget or public art, and there's often things to problem solve, and I've realized that's a strength of mine that started when I was quite young. I didn't have books or toys, so I spent a lot of time in my head thinking about stuff and visualizing and being creative inside my head. So that comes into play in my business.
So if you weren't going to school every day and you had your siblings with you, what was happening every day? Like, what was your routine, or what was... You know what I mean? Like, how did you get through each day?
Well, it's like it was really centered around my mom, my birth mother, whether she was home or not. Sometimes she would leave us alone for a week with no food.
So, oh, my goodness.
She wasn't around, and there wasn't any food. We would get to a day or a day and a half where we'd be waiting for her. And then we would have to climb out one of the apartment tenement windows and scale the fire escape to go steal or food. So that, you know, we were in survival mode. And then when she was around, we had to be in the bedroom, and we weren't allowed to make any noise. Otherwise, we would get in trouble. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was pretty intense, and it was either surviving and stealing food or being quiet so I didn't get beat. So it was kind of two. We didn't have anything in our fridge or refrigerator, but there were ice cubes, and I found ice cubes one day, I would create these games, ice cubes. There was a vacuum cleaner in one of the closets, and I found that one day and pulled it out and used it like it was a toy. And I ended up breaking it, which I got into trouble for, but I still was finding ways to try to play and have fun.
Yeah. Well, that's what children do. That's what they're meant to do.
It was like every day was different. There was no stability and no real routine, and it really centered around where my mom was at.
And what mood or, like, what state or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So would she – so you – all of the children had to be in the room and be quiet, which is, like, almost impossible for children, and six of you, of course. And then so she would be outside, and would she bring people over or
– Yeah, she – was on drugs and an alcoholic, and she would disappear, and then if she came back, sometimes she'd bring men with her.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, when I was a little older, I was aware of men coming in and out. So, and I never met my father.
Wow.
That I remember.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit bizarre.
So were you the eldest, or you were in the middle?
I wasn't the eldest. I had three older siblings.
Okay.
There were six of us.
Yeah.
Three older siblings, and then there were two younger siblings too.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it sounds like the, you know, people being, the substance abuse and all of that has sort of followed you in a certain sense. What do you think that has taught you, or what have you, what knowledge have you gained from being around and being with people in that sort of environment? What do you think that's helped you to do?
That's a good question. Well, I will say that it's something that I'm incredibly aware of. I'm very aware of addiction, whether it's alcohol or drugs, because my entire birth family, every single person in my family has a drug and or alcohol addiction. Mm. And I've seen how it has literally destroyed their lives. And I've tried doing interventions and all kinds of things to no avail. And what I've learned from watching that with my family is that it literally can destroy you, your mind, your life, your soul, and that you can have people around you trying to help you, but only when you kind of go inside and realize that it needs to come from you, that you can actually start helping yourself and make a change. So I'm and it's been something literally that's terrified me for most of my life. There was a point where I was, you know, doing well in school, and I, you know, had friends, and my life was really starting to blossom, where a part of me would think, am I going to wake up one day and something's going to happen and I'm going to have an addiction or an alcohol addiction, or like, why am I different from my five siblings and my mom?
Yeah.
And so, I basically made the commitment to stay, drug free and to, not be an alcoholic and to take care of myself and make sure that that wouldn't be a problem for me. And, but you know, it went through high school and you know, everyone was drinking and smoking pot and doing drugs. And so I had a different perspective on it.
Yeah.
And then the same with college and just staying clean and, avoiding those situations. So, I've been aware of the devastating effects of it. And I have a sensitivity to it, I guess you could say.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Definitely.
I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Yeah, it did actually. It did.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. You've got that heightened awareness, but you've seen the consequences and how devastating it is. And so you've made that conscious decision to steer clear of that, because at the end of the day, it is a choice. We can't, you know, you could have so easily turned to drugs and alcohol to try to cure your problems, but you didn't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you of all people had every excuse in the world to be able to do that, given your journey, you know. And this is unfortunately what people do, and some people don't even go half, you know, through half of what you've gone through, and will turn to that. So really, you know, it is it's a choice at the end of the day.
Yeah, so, and it's interesting too, because I have a lot of successful friends, and you know, they're in different industries: attorneys, financial advisors, accountants, and I recognize that part of how they blow off their stress and feel better is to go out and get obliterated. Mm. And there's a lot of stress in our now, and you know, people are looking for release. And so whether it's social media, or drinking or drugs or gambling, and there's so many ways to be addicted.
Yes.
And yes. I guess one of my addictions has been work and succeeding.
Yeah.
And making sure that I keep a far distance between my past and my present. But yeah, addiction's, you know, really intense to be on.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
So for other entrepreneurs out there, and given, you know, all the challenges along the way and everything you've endured, for you, what would you say, what are the three top things that they need to do in order to make their dreams a reality? What would you say to them?
Yeah. The three things that I would say that people should do to make their dreams a reality, the first thing really ties into what you authentically want to do with your life and what you dream about doing with your career. I had a lot of people that kept trying to push me off of being on the path of the arts. Mm-hmm. My parents were afraid I wasn't going to make money. Even when I opened my business, I had a lot of people in the community that felt that what the art I was showing and selling wouldn't sell. I wasn't going to be successful. My business was not going to be able to operate. I was too young. I was 26. What did I know? So I had a lot of negativity around the choice that I made to be in the art world. And I remember I had to keep resetting back to, you know, someone would say something negative to me, and I would say, well, when I close my eyes and I think about what I want to do with my life in a very authentic way, my passion is art. My passion is artists and being around that and creating that. So I'm not going to go down another career path just for the money, because I'm going to end up circling back to the art market. Mm. And then I'm going to lose years of my time. And I can't tell you how many people I meet that they go down a path that their family thinks they should go down, whether it's, you know, finance or, you know, being a doctor or an attorney, and they end up circling back to, you know, in their late 30s or 40s what they truly want to do. And so a large chunk of their time is spent not doing what they actually wanted to do. And we spend 80% of our time in our jobs. So I would say my first rule is be really honest, brutally honest with yourself about what it is that you want to do.
Yeah.
And actually make the choice to do it. Even if everyone around you is in disagreement, because I didn't really have people supporting me with my dream, probably for the first 5 years of what I was doing.
Yeah.
And so that's number one for me. Number two is I meet so many people that are in various industries, and they've never stopped to write down any goals or visions or dreams that they have for not only their work or career, but for their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I am, especially in my industry, it's more common, I think, for people to be in different types of managerial positions or corporate type jobs where you're talking about a lot of numbers, goal setting, and outcomes. And what I started finding is that when I started planning that, I started manifesting more, and things were actually happening as a result of my planning. And so that was huge for me to do that.
Yes.
And I think the third thing for me is to have belief in yourself and keep generating that on a daily basis and to not give up, because I think back now, like, to the first few years of my business where it was literally month to month, and I moved into my basement, that at that point I could have easily pulled the plug.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believed in my vision. I believed in myself, and I knew that it would happen, and so I kept going.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people, something is really hard. They're not getting the immediate result, and they give up and pull the plug and just move on or go back to what they were doing. So I would say never give up and believe in yourself.
Fantastic advice. Definitely, Bridget. I completely agree. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Can I ask you just one final question? So in terms of mindset, was there at any point, did you feel a mindset shift? Did you have to change your mindset quite a lot along the way? Or like, how were you able to believe in yourself and, you know, retain that confidence given everything that you were going through, you know, particularly those challenging times?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think, Angela, my mindset for a while was I was so terrified of failing and living the life that I was born into that my mindset was I was going to work really hard to prove to myself and people around me that I was not, you know, my past, and that fear kept driving me forward. And it worked for a long time.
Yeah.
And I realized at a certain point that my fear of failure or not succeeding was holding me back from going after bigger things professionally. And I was playing it safe. And I wanted to work with higher end artists. I wanted to sell more expensive paintings. So I really had to make another mind shift into a self-belief that I could do this. I could be passionate about what it was that I felt I wanted to do, share that with the world, and get them enrolled in it. So I made another mind shift. I think the next shift I made was realizing that, you know, I can work hard, but I don't have to work from fear and have the fear drive the number of hours I'm working. And less can be more. And I could potentially have a bigger impact in a shorter amount of time. And it wasn't based on the number of hours that I was putting in. And that really, that was a shift I had to make from how my adopted parents raised me. And especially now with all the opportunities in the world and how people are spending money and spending their time, there's more opportunity to reach a broader audience with less work, potentially. So that's another mind shift. And what I do is I realize what's holding me back, and I go really deep with it, and I use that to make a change, and I'll try a few things and experiment with it, and once it's you know, once it's working, I just run with it.
Yes.
So there was a point where I hadn't sold over a $10,000 painting, and I kept thinking, why is it when I about selling a $15,000, $20,000, or $25,000 painting, I get paralyzed? And I realized it was tied into my background with growing up in poverty and feeling guilty and kinds of emotional baggage that I had to shift my mind to step into a larger business model.
Yes.
So I guess, like, the bottom line is constantly working on yourself and, knowing where you're getting stopped and shifting what you need to try it out and push through it.
Yeah, that's a really good point, definitely. Because sometimes we can, you know, get roadblocks constantly, but we don't actually come back to what is the root cause, what's continually causing this to happen.
Yeah, I'll tell you, what I've realized recently is that the roadblocks, they're a mental illusion.
Mm.
And my mind creates many of them, and they don't really exist. And even if they did, I go around it or go through it. If I couldn't go through it, I go over it.
Yeah.
So a lot of it.
Mm.
So that's my newest shift, that a lot of these challenges in my mind.
Yeah. So true. So true. Just like fear. Fear is a big one.
Yeah.
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 Yet we let it stop us doing, you know, so many different things. So,
yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. So what would you say, Bridget's been the highlight for you of your entire journey of your career, you know, personally, professionally? What has been the highlight for you? What are you, you know, super happy about or proud about?
Wow. I think there are two things. One is, I'm really passionate about working with artists and creative people, taking things that they've made that they love and bringing it to a larger audience, and actually working with clients to bring art and joy into their lives and help them open up their own minds around art and like educating them around art. And it's something that I do every day, and I love the process. I love the people. I love connecting people in art. So I really love that. And I would say that's what's been most exciting to me the last 17 years, is how art and people can connect, and it can open minds, and art can be incredibly healing for people. It can really enlighten an environment and really shift someone and how they think about the world, and through an artist and through seeing something through their eyes. And that's one part of it. And over the last 7 years, I've done a fundraiser for a nonprofit in Philadelphia every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I've couple $100,000 since I've been doing this, and I love using art as a catalyst for growth and helping people and for change. So I'm really proud of all the fundraising that I've done and how it's impacted nonprofits and also the artists who have been part of the fundraising. So those two things I'm really excited about and really proud of.
That's fantastic. Absolutely amazing.
Well,
well done, Bridget. That's, such an incredible story, and I feel very privileged to have you share it with me. So thank you so much for your time this morning, or the afternoon over in Philadelphia.
Thank you. This is a great conversation.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, definitely. Thank you for listening to The Movement, where we help you shift your heart and mind to excel in every area of your life. We appreciate any comments and your support. Feel free to leave a review on iTunes and subscribe to our latest updates on angelinazimmerman.com.